O-P. Hopefully, he'll stay behind camera. Are we going?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a special Shaman's Den, and we have Pamela Madison from the Women's Sexuality Center as our guest today. What was the C-O-N-T-E context of you saying it was going to be interesting tonight?
Not knowing at all what I was coming into and being so inspired by you in the movie. And
why?
You know, it was so wonderful to be in that movie theater and watch you on the screen. I realized it was probably the first time in I don't know how long that I was really moved and inspired by watching sex on the big screen.
Wow. Why? Why?
Because there was heart connection.
Intimacy.
Yes. Yes. And your vulnerability to allow people witnessing you in that state. And I loved what you said, that your orgasm is not your favorite part because that means it's over. And I found it so beautiful to watch you being real and sharing yourself in such a vulnerable way.
Intimacy is N-E, never shown, like in the movies and on television.
I think that they try to capture that sometimes, but you release the energy that people could actually, I felt anyway, your authenticity. And I know that you are a performer, but I did not get at all that you were performing, although you were allowing yourself to be witnessed by thousands of people going around the world. It still felt to me so authentic and such a deep sharing of who you are that I got it. It just felt like, I mean, the title of the film I was in is Hearts Cracked Open, and witnessing you making love truly did that to my heart. It was so inspiring to me.
W. Oh. Wow.
Was that your intention?
Yes. In fact, we had to kind of fight or push a little bit to make that happen. But when Annie first invited us to be in the movie, she, you know, Frank said, well, you know, great about orgasm, Linda and I will just make love. And then she had concerns about that we have safe sex, and that she said she only shows safe sex now. And so Frank said, well, you know, we've been monogamous for however many years that was, 20 years or something. So if that's not safe, I don't know what is. And she said, yeah, but, you know, it has to, like, have to have a rubber or something like that. And he said, well, you know, isn't it a documentary? Don't you want to show us as who we are and what our relationship is? And so there was a lot of very tense phone calls before. And we kind of came to a thing where, you know, she wouldn't let there, she didn't want anything on camera that showed Frank with a penis without a rubber on it. And so, like, you know, when I was sucking Frank's penis, she made the camera turn off. And then she let it come back on when I stopped doing that and things like that. So it was
tense. So what was Why did you decide to do it? What was your hope and a wish for sharing that part of your life with the world?
That is what I have been doing for 30 years. It was just, this was just, you know, I mean, like, what we do is when things come to us, we, like, take opportunities and we don't say no to things, you know, if it's like, you know, it's just like, okay. So that's why we had to, like, not say, well, no, Annie, that's fucked up. You know, we just had to, like, really stay there and push for what would be real for us.
So was that, like, an erotic performance for you then? Is, you guys have made love on camera before?
No, I don't think we had. I think that was the first time we had done that.
So doing it for 30 years doesn't mean what I saw, but you mean you've been going out, doing, telling your story out in front of the world.
Well, putting out, like, I forget the exact words you use, but, like, you know, putting out there, you know, who we are and what we would like life to be like, you know, by example. We have done erotic performances. Yeah, for that for many years we had been doing were doing erotic performances in. In a way, erotic is the wrong word. I-N-T, intimate, is more closer to the right word.
And do you think that people, when they watch your erotic performances, is it art to them? Is it a performance? Or is it, do you get the feedback like what I shared, that
more like
it really moved
did.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We are lucky in that we do get a lot of feedback from people, and it's all positive. And Frank is always saying, you know how lucky we are? Because some people go their whole lives, and they just have to trust that what they're doing is important or that it means something to someone other than themselves. But we've all along, really, maybe except for the first very beginning part, maybe the first 10 years. First 10 years, you know, Frank really got a lot of shit from people. But that was because I am made the difference between sex and what we were doing. Is that what you mean? Sex and eroticism? And so for, this was, you know, like in the 70s. And so, people would say, well, I think what you really just want is to have sex with people and you're just calling it erotic. You know, so it was kind of like you're you know, just a dirty young guy at the time, you know, trying to get girls and you're just calling it erotic. I did not deny any of that. But we did feel like it clouded the deeper aspects of what we were doing.
That's great.
I S A I said, P-E, people need P, physical play that is not L, I, limited to L, I, N, linear, sex.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, he would say, like, that kids are, like, have a certain physical play that they do, and then as people turn into adults, because there's the possibility of sex, that most of the time, any kind of intimate physical play, most people think then they have sex. It's just kind of like goes
right
there in that linear way. And that he thought that people need to be able to physically play with each other without limits, but not having it be like sexual intercourse. Just have that kind of freedom
right
to be intimately intimately play with each other. And so, you know, for 10 years, he would kind of give that rap, and most people were like, yeah, right, you know, what does that mean? How do you know it's not sex, you know? And we got a lot of that. And then somewhere along the way, he decided that he thought language was part of the problem. And that when he's talking in terms of erotic and sex, that people just have pictures. And what he needed was a word that was didn't have any pictures. And so he created a word, aeroplay. And he that was how he defined it. And that it didn't include sex, like orgasm, intercourse, but there were no limits. You just, you know, it was physical play with another person.
Right.
And you didn't have to have, like, a committed relationship. And then he started to develop it to where he came up with other words that distinguish the different phases of intimacy so that it would allow for people to, you know, go further and still have ways of being together that wasn't necessarily just sex in the way that most people think of it.
So do you hold yourself as a visionary, a true pioneer, and...
After seeing that movie, the G. Frank, that is not my job to say to say that.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So others say it for you, and you just hold steady to the course.
Don't get a big head. Is there a W, a word for W, no, for E, R, aeroplay in T, in Tantra?
Let's see. Well, in my practice, I've called it something similar to you. When I work with couples, I call it grown-up play. Trying to get them to just loosen up and go be more non-goal-oriented around coming together. So I share that kind of concept with you. In Tantra, what would I call it? The I'm sure there is. Let me think here. Well, I think that's where I learned this concept from, is from the tantric practices of don't be goal-oriented around sex. And when you really live that, it does free you up to have more magic and spontaneous expression together. When people are locked in to the thinking that if they come together to make love or have sex, that it's going to end with orgasm and intercourse, they miss out on on the beauty of the play. You're right.
It L I limits. It limits.
Right. Right. It also sets, you know, because I work a lot with women, and what I have found is that it also creates this dynamic where the women, you know, maybe he's approached, like if it's a heterosexual couple, he may be coming up to give her a back massage, and that's sort of his signal that a back massage then leads to, you know, it's going to eventually need to end in sex. So she doesn't even want to receive his loving touch at all, because maybe she's not in the mood to spend an hour, you know, fully making love and bringing everybody to orgasm. But if she felt like at any point I could say this is far enough for me, that we don't have to end with orgasm and intercourse, then it allows women to feel much more open and spontaneous about engaging in oral sex or just rolling around together and daily, you know, numerous times a day, couples are going to connect more often if there isn't the all or nothing around sex.
And it is not J, just in B, E, in bed, but in all life, the that play possibility.
Right. Well, I think whenever people really free up their sexual energy, they get more passionate and creative in every aspect of their life. I mean, it's made me a lighter, more engaged mother with my child by really freeing up my sexual energy. And I bring that energy into my work. You know, I bring it into my friendships. It just makes me more passionate and fun and connected to everything I do. So you're right. It's not just about who we are in bed, but a big part of who we are in bed can then be carried out into the rest of our world.
And in B, E, in bed is E, X, P, A, N, expanded, D, S. So there is not the W A I waiting for the bed. Wow. Okay. So in bed is expanded. So what you would normally think of as what happens in bed, that like the arena that would happen in, is expanded. So that, like, I guess there's more like possibilities of just physical play in all the different times and days.
Ah, okay.
It's not just like when we're in bed, that's when we do the...
So kind of like the adage of, you can tell the way... can we swear on this?
Yeah, oh yeah. You betcha. You betcha.
Oh my gosh, mommy's going to say a bad word. So the old adage that you can tell the way somebody fucks is by how they dance. So you're saying that you can tell almost the way somebody is in bed by the way they hug, by the way they walk across the street, by just how they move through their world. You would have a good idea of whether or not they're playful in bed.
Like, we are M-A making L, making love now.
Well, good. It's been quite a while for me.
Oh. 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 C. C. R. Cry. No. V. Very, very interesting. How? How long?
Well, let's see.
S?
Yeah, how long?
S?
That's a good question.
C? C? How? Why? Two? H? 2 hours? See why it needs to be a 2 hour show.
Let's see. Well, I've been single for about 3 years, and I don't enjoy casual sex. So I'm sort of, I try probably about once a year, maybe. That's kind of been the average of where I'll try again, but it just never never fills me up like I'm hoping that it will.
C. A. Casual. Sex is not intimacy.
True. I think it can be, but not to the extent that I'm used to really taking my sexual energy into. So while I focus more on the play of it, the fun, the that it's enjoyable and... But what I really want from being sexual with someone is to really go very deep. And for me, that builds over time when I get to be with someone day in and day out. So it's also knowing Tantra for so long that I want that part of it too. I want my partner to have the understanding of passing the energy back and forth, the eye contact, that even though we may not know each other like I would know a long-term partner, that at least in that moment, there's great connection. And so if someone doesn't know Tantra and we're talking casual sex, I just go, I don't even want to bother. I don't want to go there. It's not satisfying to me.
Like A, B, I, big, M, A, C, like a Big Mac. He knew what he was going to say.
So there's a lot of it, but nothing nourishing?
Well, as opposed to like going out and having a good meal.
Oh, right.
It's like it's just not very satisfying. Mm-hmm. It might fill you up, but it's not very satisfying. May, T, A, taste, and it may taste good, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's lovely, but it, since I've been to where I have been through mating with someone, it just doesn't have the draw. So when I look at all the ramifications and maybe, you know, the, sort of almost sometimes it's like the risk. I just don't know until I'm actually in there making love with somebody. Like, how's this going to go? You don't know.
Right.
And that spurred a question or keep talking?
Keep talking? Yeah.
And, yeah, there's, because when my sexual energy gets opened up, I get very emotional, and that isn't always, I don't necessarily feel safe or like I want to go into those really deep places, even though that partner might be willing to hold that for me. I just find that when I come out of that and there isn't the follow-up, like it's going somewhere, that it just leaves me feeling like, you know, I think I'd rather just keep my energy to myself and really, because I'm sexual every day, as you saw in the movie that I was in. It's like a really, it's not like I'm waiting for someone. I'm still very erotic and have play with myself and practice all the Tantra. But, and just keep that energy up and flowing through myself rather than engaging with someone else and then having to do the pulling away from it. Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. I know that I explained it really well, but
yes. Anti-sex. Yes, that was another one. Frank came up with the word, and then that started created a whole new avenue of shit, which was so you're anti-sex, you know? Oh, you know, Frank, he's not for sex, and he's not for orgasm. For being. Going for sex or for not being into sex.
When you first started, people polarized on that. They either
The first, before he created the word aeroplay, and then it was him getting shit for just, oh, you're just really in it for the sex, and you're just pretending, you know, that you don't want that. And then he said, okay, so here's the word, and he defined it. And then different set of people said that he was anti-sex.
Mm-hmm.
Or B. Oh, both at the same time? Right.
Because you weren't promiscuous? Is that what you mean?
I think that they didn't. Like, for Frank, it was just like a part of a continuum. Like, agree to do Annie's video, the orgasm video. She was shocked. Right, because Annie was one of those people who said Frank's not into sex. You know, that he's just into aeroplay. And so, and then when Frank said, yes, Linda and I will make love, it's like, Frank, you make love? You're not into sex.
So, normally what you demonstrate in your
performances
is more the play. So this was kind of a rare appearance by Frank to role model start to finish sex?
Yes. It has gotten more explicit from sex since then. Since that point, but because I have expanded. The possibilities, like you mean, through the different sex, he's kind of come up with different things. So with tan play, it allows it to get more explicit without orgasm. Mm. And then with trans sex, it can be more explicit with the possibility of orgasm. But in that case, it's still not the goal. It's just that there's that possibility. Any kind of, it's allowing for depth in the relationship. Like, you know, as things go on, at a certain point, the tan play turns into tan sex. And so he created a word for that.
So you're tantric.
S. O. So they say. So they tell me. What is, what is tantric?
I think that has as many answers as there are people practicing it. For me, it's more than sex. It's really taking that sexual energy and being intentional with it, playing with it every day, and being able to infuse that into all the aspects of my life. So I don't see myself as someone who practices tantric sex. I see that who I am from studying these sexual practices, I make love that way, I go grocery shopping that way, I mother that way. It's just become part of who I am. It's not how I have sex.
How? Do? How do you? D? I? Define? No, D-E-F? You diffuse, diffuse, infuse. How do you infuse it into the rest of your life? Into grocery shopping, for example.
That by having a sense of this energy, that it's like what gives me my spark. It makes me feel beautiful. It makes me feel connected to myself and to others. That to not have to squash it, like to just think, okay, this can only come out when I'm having sex, but I'm going to make love to myself in the morning, bring this energy up, and then I'm going to put that into my smile. I'm going to put it into my eyes. I'm going to put it into my fingertips so that everyone I touch receives this energy. So seeing it as an energy that I can cultivate myself and intentionally share and sparkle with. It definitely gives me the step in my stride, that spark, the play in my voice, the excitement in my eyes, all of that.
It opens every thing up.
Right. And to not let it close back down, you know, to just always, like several times a day, you know, make contact with that energy again. And one of my workshops, you know, the women...
How do you do that?
The women, gosh, they'll have, this is just one little example, there's those vaginal weightlifting eggs. And so they insert those into their yoni and squeeze against it. And maybe they'll wear it all day long, like I wear mine oftentimes all day long. And it's just one more little reminder of feeling connected to my power that, to me, is sourced from my second chakra through my sexuality. So it's also been, it was a long, slow process for me to move away from having my sexual energy so squashed. I was raised very religiously in the Mormon church. That brings up questions right there.
My Frank's mom was Mormon too.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you know. Oh yeah. Yeah.
She was the black sheep in the family.
The black sheep for being Mormon? She was the only Mormon?
No,
or
she was the Mormon that married a non-Mormon.
Okay, right. Yeah. So for love and her sexuality, She betrayed the beliefs of the church. Mm. Yeah, that'll get you to be the black sheep real fast. Uh-huh. Good for her. So, coming from being a young, repressed Mormon girl and in my 20s trying to find this energy for myself, it was really slow. And little by little, I kept finding things that helped me not forget who I am and not have to pack up my sexual energy and put it away again, but that all day long, it's, you know, how I think. And sometimes when I start getting shut down, I'll do my Kegels, you know, or I'll just close my eyes and I'll meditate on the morning sexual meditation, the last time I made love with somebody that really inspired me. So it's a constant connection for me that I'm always returning to, because I will shut off from it. I get busy, I get stressed just like everybody else, but I have lots of things that I do throughout my day that reconnect me to it, rather than waiting for sex to reconnect me to it.
How did you first how did you find your sexual, your S-E, yourself, F-R-O, from the repressed?
How did I find myself from that? Slowly. It was, you know, even though intellectually I felt like I was ready to move on, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. I was so programmed to respond as if I was still in the church. So I noticed it most when I went to be sexual. That's when the red, you know, the lights went off. I went, oh my gosh, I'm not able to have sex. I get very scared. I would check out. I would be in bed with people and I would literally have to get up and leave. So that's when I realized that that I had a problem with sex. And through just trying different, like I tried therapy, didn't resolve it. I got educated. It didn't make me comfortable being a lover. And so I thought, you know what? There is something so deep in here around the way that I was taught and role modeled around sex, and I need to go in really deep. And that's when I started studying Tantra, was to find finding the paradigm where sexuality and spirituality were integrated, whereas in the church, you know, they're polarized, they're in different camps. And so by slowly being able to integrate those two and doing it through my body, through like a lot of sexual healing work and picking very, very safe partners where I could literally shake or break down crying and just work through my fears of being sexual. I had this program that if I was sexual, I would no longer be a spiritual being. And even though intellectually I knew that wasn't true, my body, every time I went to be sexual, was like going, don't go here. You'll have to give up something very precious to be sexual. So it was it took me years of sticking with it and just being consistent with being sexual in very safe, conscious places to where I healed myself. And then that's when I started to turn around and help other women do the same.
You were A C C you acupuncturist.
Yes. Feels like a former life. I was, I studied acupuncture and then got my license knowing that I wasn't really going to use it. But I had been studying medicinal food for so many years and the herbs. And that's what really got me into acupuncture school, was studying the herbal medicine. So I do use that a lot still with, because I work with enhancing libido naturally. So I do utilize that knowledge, but, you know, I don't work on backs and neck aches and headaches and things like that.
One of O, our K. Now, one of our kids, Koala, is in acupuncture school in Santa Cruz.
Great.
And his girlfriend.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, excellent. That's good for building your sexual chi. Yep.
he don't appear to need any help with that.
Your son or you?
Well, both maybe, huh?
Are you? Do you guys make love every day and several times a day? Maybe we're going to have two different answers here.
Oh, no, we're both saying no. She said we're going to have two different answers. We're all saying no. Two. J. A. M. Jam-packed. Our life is too jam-packed. Yeah, I mean, you know, we do that, but... you know, like we're always all together, all three of us, and our lives are real physical. And I think it's kind of like what you were describing of having that energy be part of your life all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that quality to it.
But see, for me, if I, like, I don't have a partner, so I rely on staying disciplined around doing my own practices and being sexual with myself. And if I don't do that, then life gets duller for me. I get much more coming from my head on everything. I'm very goal-oriented, task-oriented.
Mm.
You know, I honk at people that are, you know, jerks in front of me in the car. That kind of stuff. I get real type A. So I have to be sexual every day, or I'm not a very nice person.
We always are S-E sexual. Yeah, but it's not like a formal kind of like, this is our play time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would really think that you would make that a top priority every day and fit the other things in the little cracks.
It is just a part of life.
Sex is just a part of life for you?
And a P, a part of everything. And a part of everything, so it's not like kind of like sex, you know. It's all kind of like spread out, and it's all kind of one big thing. And no, that's like more important than like making dinner together or hanging out together and going over the emails for the day. I mean, it all has the same quality to it, and so there's not given. It's not given more value.
Is there? Do you seduce her? Like, do you guys schedule it in, or is there this kind of?
No, I don't. No, that there is not A S special C H charge to the sexual aspect of our life. We always are P physical. Always are P playing.
You said in the movie that something like that the orgasm is actually your least favorite part because then it means it's over. So
I didn't say because that means it's over. But he said it was. He did say it was his least favorite part. A. Because. P. People. Always. No, because people think orgasm is a. E, N, an end, because people think orgasm is an end. Yeah. And R, E, A, really, there are a lot of K kinds of orgasm.
Do you have a favorite?
Do you have a favorite kind of orgasm? No.
They're all good. Yeah.
And O, orgasm is just one aspect or part of like physical play or sexualness, sexuality. Orgasm is just one part of sexuality or physical play.
So you are playful and sexual, and then orgasms are less frequent. So you guys connect a lot more than you actually have orgasms.
I would say that's true. Yeah. 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 What do I say? Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't experience like say at the performances, that's like a good example. Like there's a point in the performance where we when we did on Saturday, but it happens all the time where it's like, okay, well we're all gonna dance now, and there were four of us. Frank and I and Erica and Kirsten, who are two of Frank's students. And like it doesn't have like this beginning feeling to it. Like once we start, and it's very explicit and erotic, and you know, and it doesn't feel like oh, now we're dancing erotically. It feels like there's just this kind of smooth like continuum or something, and I don't know. It does. That's what popped into my head when you asked that question, and I think that's just like kind of a spotlighted version of what the daily life is like. That the movement, but you know, in and out of like you know eating together, and this is all just kind of globbed together. P, I, pissing, shitting, T. T-A, taking, B, baths. Yeah, I mean, we just, like, we do everything, you know. It's like there's no, like, individual thing, you know. When Frank goes to the bathroom, I'm in there, you know, to wipe his butt. You know, I mean, it's just all so integrated that it doesn't
right.
have any it doesn't feel like there's a need for something like this to kind of firm it all up or something.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that supercharged.
Yeah, not at all.
The titillating that drive aspect
no,
of it.
No, no,
uh-huh.
It really it's
no,
so
I
much
understand.
More even.
Right.
That S U P E super C H that supercharge L limits.
Right. Mm. Well, and that's kind of what you have to have for that casual sex that I'm not good at.
E exactly.
Yeah, it's it's an energy of the chemistry and the seductive, the titillating aspects of it that isn't a regular part of my sexual energy.
Right.
So I totally understand
right.
what you guys are talking about.
Yes, it is P-E-A, peak experience, peak in the frame of peak experiences.
Not understand the
well,
question.
Well, it's like he's saying it's like a peak experience, like kind of going for those peak experiences rather than just kind of having it all be like at a level that you don't need to kind of jump up there every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's all up.
Right.
Yeah. F U N funny. P, people, E, A, peak, experiences, R, was, D, E, F, I, defined, B, by, M, A, S. Maslow. And then he F. O. And then he found P. Peak experiences were A. D. Addictive.
Thank you. Yes. Right. And that energy is definitely, I think, present in, the promiscuous or the casual sex. And it's not a draw for me. I don't want to feel like my offering to connect with someone is trying to meet some kind of deeply unmet need that even I'm not going to be able to come in there and satisfy that. Mm. But there's some other agenda. There's a very different reasoning for coming together. So I agree.
I H A had A H E a hard time getting people to Andrea at the performance we did on Saturday night. Frank, so he asked somebody if they would undress me, and the guy said yes. And so I went over and just let him completely undress me. Then I sit down, and then Frank was doing other things, talking to the audience throughout all of it, but he started seeing if he could get someone to undress Kirsten, and people just kept saying no, they wouldn't do it. And then he was trying Erica. Would you undress Erica? No. And he went through a bunch of people before he finally got two people that were willing to undress Kirsten and then Erica. And E, you never know what's going to be the thing that is hard for people to do. Like, he thought that was just like a tosser. You know, that was just going to be an easy thing to kind of break the ice at the performance.
Uh-huh.
He didn't realize that was going to be like a really big thing. That was going to be so difficult. Do U C F find that in your work?
Well, my work is very different than your performance work, for sure. I would say, you know, people have like a hard time even coming into my center or picking up the phone to make an appointment. But once they're in the door with me, then they feel the safety and they start to relax and they trust me. But I always work one-on-one. I mean, I have group classes, but there isn't any group nudity. There is nothing, you know, I'm not undressing. So it's a very different approach. So I, you know, I can imagine that it's difficult for people to, you know, participate in something, you know, as intimate on stage as undressing a woman. But my approach for what I'm doing, really, really different. So I'm sure there's similarities.
Why do people come to you?
Why do they come to me? Various different reasons. It's a lot. I work a lot with women that have had trauma, some kind of sexual, like a rape, incest, being, you know, for me, there wasn't anything physical that happened to me, but it was in my environment. It was in the way that I believed. And so I get women that are 30s, 40s, 50s, looking for more comfort, more expression, more ability to just free up that energy. I work a lot with women that are orgasmically blocked, you know, usually due to these experiences or their emotional inhibitions. And then sometimes I'll get people that come in, a lot of couples, so trying to really help couples that are staying together for a long period of time, how do they keep growing sexually together? So usually they haven't, and they're coming in to figure out, you know, how do we get back on track? And then some people also want to learn. You know, they don't feel like they have any hang-ups. They don't really need any kind of healing work, but they want, like, to learn Tantra. They want to be this absolute exquisite lover, and can I train them in the sexual arts? So what's interesting about those people is that maybe they come in looking like, let's say, a woman wants to learn how to ejaculate. So from my vantage point of how integrated I see sex into all that she is, it's not just like, yeah, I can teach you how to orgasm. I can teach you how to ejaculate. And yet what she ends up leaving with is, oh, you know, a deeper sense of pride, a deeper sense of being able to take that energy into all the other areas of her life. I'm not interested in just teaching somebody to ejaculate. For me, it's always, how do we get that energy integrated into who they are and affecting every aspect of their life? So, a lot of different reasons why people come through the door.
Yes. It is not L I N linear.
Right. Definitely not. Yes.
People. Think it is. Think S E sex is linear.
Yeah, for let's say like the woman who's coming in to learn how to orgasm, it's like, can't you just teach me that? And it's like, you might have to cry along the way. Your stuff is going to come up. If that's what's preventing you from being able to feel that pleasure and let go into it, then as I'm showing you and teaching you how to do that, you're going to have to go over here, and you're going to have to go over here, and you're going to have to go this way. It's not just, oh, there's the orgasm, I'll go there. When women and men are reaching for greater potential and how much pleasure they can feel, it's a very emotional process, all the stuff that they have, the layers of why they aren't doing it in the first place come up. And so there's a lot of healing that goes on in the sessions.
What is P L E? What is pleasure?
You know, I think I've got a little different take on that than most people would say. Kind of back to that thing of the casual sex, I think most people are coming together for the erotic hit, that peak in the brain chemistry that says, yes, you know, this was exciting, and that they feel good. They just want to feel good. And for me, that is not a very important part of sex. It happens, but it's not my goal.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know, when we were talking about kind of why the casual sex isn't a fit for me, there's also when people don't understand that coming together to exchange energy and to have connection and intimacy, and they're focused on the goal of orgasm or the performance or the pleasure, I find myself exhausted when I go that route. So...
And B, O, and bored?
Yeah. Very, very much so. That it's just not, there's no draw to it anymore. It was never something that was a big pull, but earlier on, you know, like years and years ago, I explored a little bit just because all of sexuality was new to me. But now that the bar has been raised so high, I know what's possible, and I'll just wait to have those kind of experiences. And in the meantime, I'm very fulfilled having this personal, solo sexual encounter.
We are P R O G programmed to go for the peak orgasm intense thing.
Right. And again, it drains people's energy, and it is a bore. I mean, I think if you have these big orgasms at some point in your life, you kind of go, isn't there more? What's the point of this?
Yes. E. M. Empty.
Right. And that is oftentimes when people walk through my door is, okay, you know, I've been orgasming and having sex for 30 years, and I'd rather go watch a really good film than have sex. So unless you can teach me something that's going to make this more compelling for me, I'm willing to let it go. So, I mean, we see so much loss, like in women that, you know, menopause. I mean, women can really lose their drive, especially. And so how to get them reconnected to the passion inside of themselves. Yeah?
And E, X. P, expand and expand. Expand what the passion is, I guess.
Well, getting back to your thing of what's the, you know, what's pleasure? Well, it's not enough if you're chasing those peak experiences. You do that, you know, time and time again over so many years, and it isn't enough to keep people interested in it. So to take them down into that their sexual energy, their sexuality is sort of the core of who they are, that through that they can receive spiritual nourishment, through that they can be heightened emotionally, they can experience greater intimacy, that they can feel more of this sense of, oh, if I don't keep my passion limited to when I have an orgasm, but I bring it up into all my other chakras, then life gets interesting again. It's like, oh, then I want to go be sexual and maybe not even orgasm so that I can move that energy into all the areas of my life through all my chakras. Does that make sense?
Yes. And, or, no, and B, and B, T, O, together, W, with, the, O, other, and being together with the other, and being together with the other. That is what is F fulfilling.
You mean when someone connects into that energy and then they share that, they extend that over into their partner? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think he's talking about that you're with the person all. The other is the, isn't that right? It's not like you have it and you're bringing it to somebody else, but like having, being together with the other be the aspect of the pleasure, like just like as opposed to like having the orgasm, like as if like that, like just the being together. But I think when he says being together, he's talking about intimate, deep. Like in a deep way, being together with the other, that is part of that pleasurable experience.
Right. There's in all the beginning of my notebooks that I share with my students, I have this quote: "Sex isn't something you do; it is a way of being." So.
Yes.
And when people shift over to really experiencing that, then it takes all the performance off of it. It takes the addictive part out of it. That sometimes it's a little bit like eating oatmeal every day. It's not that exciting, but it's incredibly nourishing.
Not. It's not like that. But.
Lost you.
Well,
he's
kind of like the quality of the interaction, and I think, you know, you're not only talking about when you're having like sex, but just you're using that in the broadest sense of like that first thing he was going with. I mean, you can think of that also as like the way people are when they have sex, where it's just like that, and he's going, it's not that, it's more like
That it's peaceful, you know, and not that the energy doesn't rise, but I think what we're distinguishing here is that that sense of urgency that can bring up that addictive quality.
Yes,
that
exactly.
It comes from like a really unmet need that I don't even think is sexual.
Right. It. See. O, N, E, C O N E, no, it. Is that better? Yeah, it, C, O, M comes from being P, E, N, pent up. That's where that, what we're calling that need or that urgency comes from, being pent up. And I guess you mean in every way.
See, I would disagree with you on that, because just in the people that are like kind of coming to mind around this more addictive way that they engage sexually, they're not pent up. They're having sex frequently sometimes. So I don't see it as like a big bursting of energy, but more of a very, very deep unmet need emotionally. Mm. That there is like, they are trying to get something filled through being sexual, and it's not providing that for them. Because there isn't the deeper context of the intimacy.
It is like not, it is like you, S, using a H, a hammer to U, N, S, C, unscrew a jar, to unscrew a jar, to unscrew a S, C, R, screw. It's like using a hammer to unscrew a screw.
Right. It's, they try and try, but it's not what's going to fill them up.
B, E, because they have B, E, they have been T, O, told S, E, sex is the E, the W, the way to release, to release. They've been told, is that it? To release all of that energy. They've been told that sex is the way to release all of that energy, so... Yeah. And B, U, B, and by S, and by sex, they, it, is, J, just, like the, what they mean by sex, you mean, is just the, like the peak orgasm, like getting off kind of thing.
Right. That it really lacks that deep, deep connection. And sex could, I believe, would heal them, would fill it up for them. So their instinct is right. They're going towards something that could possibly help them heal and feel really loved and deeply accepted in life. But when you don't know how, when you don't have that intimacy muscle built, when you don't know how to really connect in with another person, or the other person isn't there to connect, it's more like for the fun of it, the sport of it, the physicality of it, that it doesn't offer them that level of healing. So they keep kind of chasing it.
And they think it is something W R wrong with them, that it's not doing what they think it's supposed to do.
You know, I don't think so. I think that they're that on many levels it's giving them something. You know, it feels an ego need, maybe only on at moments of, maybe right afterwards or at some point of reflection, they feel the ache. Right. But otherwise, that's the whole point of the addiction is, you know, your behavior isn't healing you. It's not filling you up. And so they just run this kind of, do it over and over again, hoping that this time it might provide something that it never, ever does.
Right. E, W, H, I, which is the, C, L, A, S classic D R drug addiction. It's the classic drug addiction, what you just described, mm-hmm. that
right.
pattern.
Right.
Where? See? No. Where? What? Is? M? E? D? I? C? I? N
medicine
F O O oh medicinal food. What is medicinal food? You had mentioned that earlier.
Cooking with herbs and using like all foods have properties to them. Like spice does one thing. You know, yams are going to be more nourishing, especially like female hormones. So every food has its own its own property, its own way that it affects the body. And so being able to eat according to what the results are that you would like in your body is incredibly helpful. You know, instead of just going, oh, I'm going to be a vegetarian, going like, okay, if I'm going to be a vegetarian, how am I going to get that fire in my body? So, you know, perhaps eating more spice, that kind of thing. Mm. Is medicinal food a new,
no,
new
we,
thought?
No, I think we're kind of unofficially have been in that, you know, for, I mean, I've always been like that, in, you know, not kind of thinking of myself as that, but I've always been that way. You know, I have shelves and shelves and shelves of books on herbs and food and nutrition and stuff. I'm just kind of interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we grow herbs, we dry herbs, we make tinctures, we make vinegars,
right.
you know, we do all that kind of
right,
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I might add in... like female tonic herbs if I'm making a chicken stew because I want it to be really, really nourishing to me.
Yeah.
So it's taking, just using food and going one more level with it or maybe several more levels to where instead of it just tasting good, there's a reason why you're adding in all these spices.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets real, it's just so, what a difference to be able to sit down to a pot of soup that has been cooked with, you know, like Chinese herbs for, you know, 6 or 7 hours, and
Whoa.
It's highly digestible. Yeah. And
well, so we haven't gone quite that, that far. I mean, but I'm interested in that. We just haven't done it, you know. I mean, I'm totally like that. When we eat, I know it has like seaweed, and I know, you know, the vinegars have been infused with these herbs, and so I'm like aware of all that stuff. When
right.
But, like, you know, and I'm aware of cooking with Chinese herbs, for example, and stuff like that, but we haven't, like, kind of done that.
I used to spend, I would say at least 3 to 4 hours of my day was spent easily making food.
Uh-huh.
You know, I spent a lot of time cooking and sometimes spending days making a stock that I would then use for the week.
Mm.
So it's... And being able to cook for, it was interesting because when I really got into it, I had a young baby. So I'm eating foods that are going to, like, build my blood and my energy back up. And, you know, then kind of thinking, well, what would my husband need?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
nice.
So that's where, when you really get into the medicinal cooking, what might be really great for your needs and your body is going to be different than what she eats. And kind of in our society, we kind of label foods as good or bad. Either they're good for you or they're bad for you. Well, something that's bad for me may be, you know, something that is vital to you really feeling good or not getting headaches or dissolving phlegm.
So what
phlegm,
kind
that
of, like, for example, what kind of things might you put in a stew that would be good for you and for all of us?
Let's see. Dong Quai, which is a female tonic herb. You can cook with it. You can put it in anything.
You use it like the root? You would get the root?
You're going to... You pull it out like when you're actually going to cook. So it just goes
into
make stock.
It. You grow it yourself.
You could buy it. Yeah. You would want to buy it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is it like it's the root that
and
you just put in?
And ginseng is another
one. You just
one.
Put like the whole root in or do you cut it up?
Yeah, the tonics are the things that, it comes sliced. Mm-hmm. So tonics are things that you can utilize like kind of day in and day out and not feel like you're going to really overdo it. Spice might be something that, you know, for some people is something you don't want to overdo. So, but the tonics are really a great safe way to go, and they just
so you'd
add
put like Dong Quai and ginseng in the soup or the dish.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you just cook it in like if you're making chicken soup. Just throw it in there, and then you just, you don't eat them. I mean, you're going to know to not eat them because they stay big and
chunky.
They do. They have a real, generally a sweet. The tonics tend to taste very, very sweet. And there's like little red raisins that you could get at a Chinese herbal store.
And what are
and
they?
And then you throw those into...
they're just red raisins?
Yeah.
Is that what they are?
And then you throw those into oatmeal and that kind of thing. You can also cook them in your soups and they puff up and you can eat those.
And what do they have? What's there about them?
They're also a tonic. They're a qi tonic, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun, and there's just so many wonderful books out now for the layperson to be able to just incorporate it in a more mild fashion. But for me, I mean, when I decide, ooh, this is interesting for me, I obsess over it.
Right.
So, you know, I spent years really studying it.
Do Y M I. Not surprised. To hear that.
I probably won't know a whole lot about a lot of things in life, but there's a few things that I'll know really well. So, yes, I love that single-mindedness. I just block everything else out, and I focus in on one thing, and I learn it. I just really, and I can't, like I would be horrible in college where I have to take like a lot of classes. I get my idea and I go for it, and it takes me a long time to really get to where I understand it and master it.
Mm.
Are you that way, or are you a great multitasker?
No, Frank, the Renaissance man, he does like, but I think you do them all well, you know, but he's not, I wouldn't say he's like the way you described yourself, but, yeah, he does a lot of things really well. He paints, you know, so we have all the house full of his paintings. And let's see. That's Koala Bear. That's our one kid that's studying acupuncture. Frank painted that for him when he was born.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he said that, you know, his name is Koala Bear Moore. He said he hated the name until he got to be like a preteen and he realized the girls thought it was really cool.
Right.
And then it was like... Good name.
My son's name is Samson. So
he might have had a similar experience.
Right. Well, I used to worry, like, oh my gosh, how could I do this to a child? How could I name someone something such a strong name?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fine, and he loves it because it's totally unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are... I raised them in, there were five or six of us that raised the kids, and we were all their parents. And so they knew who their biological parents were, but that was not emphasized. So they really had to relate to all of us as parents. And we also raised them to be equally responsible as the rest of us in, you know, kind of, you know, just like pulling their weight and not, you know, and being just responsible. And And we actually interviewed Koala. We had him as a guest on the show a couple of years ago. And Frank said, okay, this is your chance to get back to us. What was it like? Boy, it was really interesting hearing him talk, because it wasn't until he was years beyond it, he's like 30 now, that he realized that his experience of growing up was so unique.
Right.
And he didn't know that.
Right.
I mean, he had, like, we gave him, he knew what his limits are, but he had absolute freedom within those limits. And we expanded the limits as he got older and showed himself to be responsible. So, I mean, on the superficial level, he said he realized, you know, that he was allowed to kind of go up to telegraph after school. And we, you know, he knew he had to be back at a certain time, and we'd kill him if he wasn't, you know. And whereas other friends weren't allowed to walk without a block at their house, and it was all this kind of, like, you know, scary kind of stuff. And he didn't realize that was, like, unique or unusual, like, on that level. Plus, he had weekly sessions with Frank from, you know, one time he was, like, I think 9 or 10, after he stole money from one of us and blamed it on his young black friend. And we found out that it was actually him. Not only did he steal it, but he blamed the black kid, you know. And so, okay, time for you to have sessions with Frank.
So what does sessions with Frank mean?
Well, he grew up seeing people go into the studio. Like, we convert our garage, wherever we live, into Frank's studio.
Uh-huh.
And he has students that would come on a weekly basis and meet with Frank. And so he grew up with that happening, never knowing exactly what happens in the studio. So, and then we said, okay, it's time for you to start having meetings with Frank. So we had to be home on Wednesday nights, you know, Wednesday right after school, and him and Frank would go into the studio. At first, he resisted. Yeah, he didn't care for it. But then he kind of got into it. I mean, it would be Frank just talking to him about what was going on in his life and trying to give him a frame, you know, to you know, just to see how to be a responsible human being, and that you're responsible for what happens in your life, and see how that plays out, you know, in specific things that would happen in his life. He would show him and talk to him about things. And so that's what we found out at the interview. He said, I think I was like about 9 when you talked to me about being responsible and how I'm responsible for how my life goes. He said, I think I got it. Do you think I got it when you told me about that? I think I got it. He says, and I look around and I realize that, like, most adults don't get that, you know, and I didn't realize, you know, that that was, like, not something everybody knew. People. L, limit, kids, right, by thinking, like treating them like kids, kind of, like he knew that he had to, you know, if he said he had was going to do something, that he had to do it, and like he would see us sitting around and giving each other a hard time if one of us didn't do what we were going to do, and we treated them the same way. And so they kind of saw themselves as like equals in that way. You know. It is T, trust, TR, treating them, W, with respect.
Right. Yeah, I know with, so how old is, it's Koala?
Koala and Kailin.
And Kailin.
Yeah.
So how old are they now?
They're both 30. They were born in 75.
Oh, so they're twins.
No, they just had two different moms.
Oh,
they were born
within
days of each other.
Oh, I need to think outside the box on that one. Yes, there's more than one
imagine
answer.
What it was like for them growing up, because people would always say, oh, so you're twins? Wow.
Well, thank you, Rock.
A.
Got caught on that one.
L. I. Little. K. N O W known fact there that W O M women who L live together get on the S A same right cycle. We all would have our period at the same time.
Right, right. Yeah, even in my classes, when the women are gathering for like more than 6 weeks, we start, all of us lining up, we start pulling the women that are, you know, ovulating at a different time. We get them all lined up. Yeah, it's great. And women that like cohabitate together, roommates and that.
Yeah.
And me and my sexual partners, being with women and living with women, definitely, you know, we would start within months of starting to cycle together, which is great at ovulation, but, you know, you wonder if you're going to make it through PMS when both women are sharing the same cycle.
E, exactly.
Right.
We had three women and two or three men. Actually, we had four women at one point. Four
well, see,
women.
And this is where medicinal, if you knew how to medicinally cook for these women, right. That PMS would be diminished.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. D, D, A, darn. We should have known that then, right? Two, L, too late.
Right. Well, orgasms help with PMS, too. Cramps and PMS move the sexual energy. Maybe you helped out in that way.
No. I have a H E A D headache. Oh, there were no I have a headache. Is that what you're saying? There were no I have a headache? Is that oh there would be no I have a headache with the medicinal cooking. Right.
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 Uh-huh.
Right.
So instead you got there was a lot of headaches going on?
No, there wasn't for us, but he's just saying that,
right.
You know. Yeah. Do you S E C Y I could not think give you what we would be talking about.
Ah. Yeah, I got it. I think I'm doing more of the interviewing, though. Maybe that'll be my new calling in life, is to start doing interviews.
I think of it more. No, I think of it more of a conversation. You think of it as more like a conversation.
Right. Well, that's why you're good at what you do. You can just get people to forget the camera and connect with you. And you talk like you're sitting in your living room just right. Talking about whatever whatever is interesting.
You get M more D E depth doing it that way.
Right. Do you have a favorite interview? Something that really stands out?
Do you have a favorite interview? Something that really stands out? I don't think we really think of it that way. I mean, because we're like, we feel pretty lucky that we have a situation where we can have people over like this. I mean, you know, just have you come over and sit like this and talk. It's,
right.
You know, and that we look at it, it's just, you know, we feel pretty lucky. And then the side thing of that is getting all this information out to the world and, you know, changing the world and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it starts with this.
How long have you guys been, like, going on television and that? Has it been, like, 30 years that...
No.
No.
Well, Lover is 5 years old, and Frank started this show a year before that on another station. But do you mean... Where, when, we, S.T. started doing public stuff?
Well, I have this, I'm trying to recall, you know, as I'm sitting here and I'm watching the interaction, I'm thinking I have seen you guys like a long time ago on some kind of a program, you know, not your own program, but you were... a guest on something?
Video West did something about us in the 70s. That's probably one of the earliest.
Would that have gone out to, like, elementary schools and as a teaching? No.
No.
Okay.
No. That was dumb. I think they ended up on PBS. That was, you know, it was that kind of thing on television. We... P. O. Pop up. Everywhere. We do. It's true. Yeah. On. In. All. Kinds. Of, all kind, like, you know, will pop up, like, in the poetry world and the political world, like in Annie's movie, the sexuality stuff, performance art. It's, we do, you know, we're kind of, like, involved in everything. But, I mean, we're just, this is what we do, but it kind of, we do it in all the various arenas.
Right.
Would you... R. E. Reed. One of my poems.
I would love to.
R. I. Rings of Orgasm. Mm. Oh, fun. I. Oh, Frank wrote this for Annie's movie.
Oh.
Yeah. Woo!
Hello.
S. See?
I went out in front of the camera.
See what happens when he comes out from behind the
camera.
Okay. So it's this page and that page.
Okay. Uh-oh. I'm not going to be able to see.
Do you need glasses?
Is my green bag in here? Yeah. Yeah, I can't read it.
We're hunting for glasses.
I think I left it in the living room.
Oh, okay. Great.
Well,
oh, is that it?
There.
That might be it here. Is that it?
Yeah,
okay.
To show the whole world what's in my green bag.
Zoom in,
maybe. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Do.
Got it.
You. No. S. Susie Block.
Susie Block.
She's like a sex therapist. Susie, she has a Block cable show and an internet show. Dr. Susie Block.
Dr. Susie Block. Mm. Where does she?
She's based in Los Angeles, and she has a cable show in various cities. Like, we sponsor it here in Berkeley, where she dresses in sexy clothes, mm-hmm, and she does her interviews on her bed, and
no,
has like a boa crawling up her arm, mm-hmm, and it's very very explicit, mm-hmm, stuff. You would, you should be a guest on her show. Yeah, she does it live every Saturday night. We've been guests on her show a couple times, mm-hmm, and she's a very good interviewer. She's very smart, and playful, and you'd have a good time being interviewed. I'll give you her contact info before you leave. Yeah.
Mm. Any dedications of your... Mm. No?
No.
Okay. Rings of orgasm. Rub me deeply into you. Lose myself into you. Rub my cock, hard or soft, on your pleasure bone, feeling hairy, prickling pleasure. Clicking up the intensity deep inside my balls. A deep laugh is tickling its way from deep inside my belly. A heart sob is pushing outward from my throat. Rings of orgasm, each melting into the next. Not climaxes, not Charlie horse ends with a shared cigarette, but a daisy chain of orgasms. Everlasting, never ending. Smell your skin, breathe you deeply into me. Suck me deeply, so I am now a part of you. So we are no more. So we are one body. Rubbing melting skin, goosebumps, chills, skin orgasms. Orgasm is death within pleasure, where control, even who we are, vanishes. And we float, skin rubbing at the heart of the universe, our combined body orgasm pumping out visions and dreams of life and light. Within the rings of orgasm, we are the universal heart, pumping magic, nursing everything. We were conceived within orgasm. We were brought into this world within the birth orgasm. We were nursed from mother's orgasm. We will go out in the orgasm of death. Live within, dream within, love within, the rings of orgasm. Rub me deeply into you. Lose myself into you. Rub my cock, hard or soft, on your pleasure bone. Feeling hairy, prickling pleasure. Clicking up the intensity deep inside my balls. A deep laugh is tickling its way from deep inside my belly. A heart sob is pushing outward from my throat. Rings of orgasm, each melting into the next. Frank Moore. Wow. So you are one of those fabulous multitaskers, a great painter, a poet, a living room conversationalist. Yes, that's beautiful. Thank you for letting me share that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, we did it. We should plug your stuff, your website and all that stuff.
Yes, PamelaMadison.com. And we have a center in Santa Barbara where you can actually walk into. It's a beautiful, sacred, healing environment. And we have a lending library there. We have a store there. Soon we're going to be online with our store.
What do you sell in your store?
We sell everything from vibrators and dildos and harnesses to, the S-shape, the crystal wands, the G-spotters, candles, everything to create a sanctuary in your bedroom to also the toys and the play. And it's just beautiful. It's like a store like I have never walked into before. There's crystals and Buddhas. amongst the dildos and the toys. So it's a wonderful, again, my whole thing in life is let's get the sexual and the spiritual connected. So it's, you know, you just feel comfortable even in their shopping. Yeah. I'll have you over. Yes, come to Santa Barbara and you can, I'll show you my space. I would love to have you there.
Ever do pee performances at your space?
We will when you come.
There he goes. She said we will when you come.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm too shy.
They all say that.
Do you travel? Will you guys come to Santa Barbara? I would love to have you there. That would be wonderful.
When we are not broke. We've gone through an extended broke period, so that's cut our travels down. Mikey is a graphic designer, and when the economy kind of went kerplop, he went from having like plenty of work to like no work. And so, yeah, we've just pretty much just been getting by, but it's not, you know, the travel has ended.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm sure there'll be a day when we're not broke. L A Last year, we did last year we did New York and L.A., I think, right?
Yeah, last year was L.A.
Last year was L.A. Oh, it was Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did a performance there. And the year before that, it was L.A. and New York.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's like usually every year we go to L.A. And then for a while they were going to New York every year, which we like that a lot. But we like New York a lot, to visit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we would go there.
I would imagine, too, that your performances would go over very well there. There would be an acceptance then.
In New York. Yeah, I think we
in New York. I know that's where. Isn't that where the I haven't seen it, but I hear a lot about it. The puppet penis,
Are you familiar with that?
Something.
Yes. Yeah.
I have so many friends that have gone to see it, and they just think it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was off Broadway, but it originated in New York.
Yeah. So the answer is yes, we will.
Okay.
But we're not sure when yet. S. Susie's been trying to get us down there to be a guest on her show because that's all become like a yearly event. So she. H. A. Had. P. Had us. Do. A performance. A performance? Yeah, one Saturday night. The last time we were there, we were her guest. And then after her show, her official show was over, and then she handed it over to Frank to do a performance. D, Dumb Men. Okay, so she charges people, you know, I think a substantial amount of money, you know, to come in to watch her show live. $30 to $35 to come in just to, like, watch the show, watch her interview people. And so here, all these men that pay their $35 have an opportunity to physically play with Susie, and all the women wouldn't do it, wouldn't do it. So Frank creates this thing. You know, we lay the mat down, and Frank's laying on the mat, and he says, anybody who wants to be involved in the performance, you can either be watchers or participants. He calls the participants heroes because they're dumb. They think that risk is fun. All S E X sexy women. It was all the sexy women that came to the center to participate. So it's Frank, Mikey, and Corey, who was the other one of Frank's students that came down with us, and all these women, yeah, including Susie and so, you know, the three of them, they all just play, you know, there was a ritual that Frank kind of has worked out and everything, that, but it involves physical play. So it was all these sexy women and Frank, Mikey, and Corey. M, E, men, I mean, they were just, you know, like this, you know, and like kind of drooling, you know, but just, you know, I mean, the one guy said he would do it only if we could guarantee that he wouldn't be paired with a man, because you get paired. That was part of it. You know, they weren't willing to risk being paired with a man in order to have an opportunity to be paired with what were mostly women. So the odds were that you would be paired with a woman. You know, but that didn't matter. Yeah. S. So. Yeah, so you guys had to deal with it. And I. And you did. Right.
Saved the show, didn't you? Yeah.
M. E. Men. Have F, R, E, A, freaked out, O, over, rubbing, what was it, rubbing each other's feet or neck or something? Yeah, there was one ritual we do where people are paired, and I pull these gestures out of a bag that, at random, and but there's a range. It's like anywhere from look in each other's eyes or hold hands or rub each other's feet to explore each other's entire body using all of your body, to rub each other's genitals, not for not for sexual reasons, but for body comfort. So you don't know what you're going to get, and then you do them for like a certain like a minute or two or whatever, and then another one's pulled, or sometimes longer. But we've had men freak out over the gesture of rubbing each other's feet. B, because they like. Because they liked it. That's what they freaked out about. Because it felt good. And I thought that must mean they're gay.
Right.
You want to try to wrap it again? Okay, plug it one more time. Your website.
Oh, the website. Yes. PamelaMadison.com.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In Santa Barbara.
Yes, and if you missed it, it will be archived on our website. So you can look at the Shaman's Den archives. Okay, this is Lover. Your player's going to stop. Hit play again.